You're listening to NGSC Sports Radio. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome once again to the Student of the Game. I am Kyle Nash, the Student of the Game, and here with me, coming from the station in Sumter County, Chris Rankin, the local hero firefighter extraordinaire. Chris, what's going on, man? How are you holding up against the natural disasters of the state of Florida?
Hey, luckily, knock on wood, everyone's been kind of pretty good out here today, so hopefully we'll keep it up like that during this show.
Kind of pretty good. That's strong analysis, Chris. I like it.
Yeah.
No, hey, always good time all the way around. We did see what looked like some natural disasters of football games, and we did see some very natural beauty as well in others. But speaking of a game, well, before we get too much into the games, I thought about this on the drive home, and I wanted to bring it up as a topic real quick. So I know this is college football, so bear with me. I know I'm not an expert. It's my second language. So, but earlier on, you had the old ball coach, Steve Spurrier, retire in the middle of the season. Then you got Miami Hurricanes, firing their coach, and then UCF's George O'Leary retiring in the middle of the season. Maybe I'm thinking too old school. I mean, right, I'm 36, so of course, you know, bury me in a grave. But maybe I'm thinking old toot school, but what the hell happened to, you know, finishing out the season, Chris? Am I missing something here? I mean, is this a trend that you're okay with? Is this something you like to see happen? Is it something you think that's dumb like I do? What?
Well, there's quite a bit of openings that have opened up in the previous weeks, too. I mean, you know, West Virginia opened up as well.
Oh, yeah.
With the Steve Spurrier with South Carolina, he didn't really retire. He resigned as the head coach, which is kind of opening his options to stay kind of in, you know, maybe if there's another intriguing
opportunity
that comes by, then, yeah, maybe, you know, he could go to that. I mean, also USC opened up 2 weeks ago as well.
Right.
But
I forgot about USC. But that was a little different. That was less about the coach bowing out. I mean, I guess the Miami one was too, and more about, look, you're sucking so bad, you need to go home. I'm more talking about.
Well,
go ahead.
No, USC coach is really about his personal issues, drinking problems, showing up to games and meetings drunk.
Right.
Of the USC one.
Right.
But Al Golden, yeah, he's like basically cashed in. He was done. He knew he was going to get fired in there. And then when they get blown out by Clemson,
right.
Worst loss in history, then, you know, something was going to come up there. With George O'Leary, I think, you know, there's reports. He said, you know, when he said he was retiring, that he wanted to retire after 2013 when they won the Fiesta Bowl of Baylor. He wanted to retire. The administration said, well, we want you back and everything. And, you know, he signed a contract extension after that as well through 2018. His contract would have ended this year already. And he told them that he'll stay on 2 years through this year. And he's trying to groom our offensive line coach and their offensive coordinator, Brent Key. But, you know, he's not going to do anything. He won't have his job. Actually, UCF's going to be paying him $700,000 over the next 24 months because he will not be the head coach because that was a clause in his contract.
Right.
So, O'Leary's just stepping out now. He said before, you know, he'll keep coaching until he's not having fun every day. And, you know, with an 0-8 team getting blown out week after week,
yeah,
you know, he doesn't like to make decisions during the season, which is kind of hurting him. I mean, me personally, I mean, you know, I follow UCF and probably listeners don't care about this. Defense coordinator would have gone weeks ago.
Right.
I would. O'Leary's a defense coordinator coach. He was trying to fill in as the athletic director as well as an interim position. He resigned 2 weeks ago from that so he can concentrate on coaching. I would, right then, when he did that, he should have got rid of the defense coordinator, how bad defense has been playing. Defense is playing so bad because the offense is playing. I would have demoted our offense coordinator back down to O line coach because our line's been pitiful because he's been neglecting them.
Right.
And I would have made a phone call to the old offense coordinator, Charlie Taft, who's sitting in the broadcast booth for all the UCF games, just say, hey, Charlie, I need a favor. Just come call plays on Saturdays. You only have to work one day and I'll double your salary what you're making on the radio show.
Taft.
That would have been my plan for that. I mean, he could have stuck out his ears and he could have resigned. You know, they both say it might have helped, but you know what? Play calling's been atrocious this year for them. But, you know, maybe instead of an 0-12 season where it's looking like they're going to be going to do, you know, it could have been like that 4-8 team.
Well,
if you just made those changes a little earlier.
Yeah, here's where I am on it. And, I mean, great analysis, by the way. I mean, no beef there. I mean, I get the part where, I mean, that's become the line. I'm going to keep doing it until it's not fun anymore. And, I mean, look, when you're an 0-8 program, no matter where you are, if you're the head football coach, it's going to be bad. And, you know, you don't have the advantage of, you know, chowing down in tailgates on some breakfast sushi, you know, to feel better about life, which, by the way, eggs, hash browns, jalapenos and cheese wrapped in weaved bacon. That's all I'm saying. But anyway, that's right. The breakfast sushi made the show. What you going to do, Chris? What you going to do? Anyway, no, I get the whole concept of I'm going to coach till it's not fun anymore. And I believe Spurrier said the same thing. But just because it's not fun anymore during a season doesn't mean you quit right then, does it? I mean, I think O'Leary even dropped the line, well, I'm going to take the high road and step aside. How the hell is quitting in the middle of the season the high road? I don't get that. Am I missing something?
Here's the thing. It's hurting me. Everything's about recruiting with college now. And Spurrier said it when he resigned. He's saying, you know, you get these commits that are going to commit. They want to know if you're going to be there 3-4 years down the road with them. Because when they're committing, they're signing a legal contract saying, I'm coming to play for you. If the coach is not there, it could hurt the schools. You know, you still got a little feeling of the school, especially Spurrier's been at, you know, South Carolina for almost like 10 years now. O'Leary's been there at UCF for 11.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, O'Leary helped build UCF to what it is now, getting on campus stadium, you know,
as a national
nationally
power.
Ranked.
Yeah.
He got all that for them. So his heart's still there with them.
Right.
So, you know, you're getting these players coming in. O'Leary's like, you know what, I want to kind of, you know, I don't want them to think about jeopardy. Well, he's not going to be here or there or anything. But, I mean, really, realistically, at UCF, there's going to be no coaches there.
Yeah.
Same thing could happen out there in Miami. There could be no coaches there as well.
Well, actually,
and you got all these teams, that, these players, you know, they're like, oh, I'm going to go play for this coach. Well, that coach might not be there now either. Yeah.
You mentioned
because
Miami.
Who knows, he might take a job.
You mentioned,
all these
you mentioned Miami.
Power Five conferences,
actually,
job openings that are going on.
Yeah. You mentioned Miami. They actually had a kid decommit from there, actually, I heard, too. So, I mean, that kind of speaks to the point I guess you're maybe making. Maybe I'm missing that a college coach firing is a PR move. Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah, it could be. And also, I mean, it's really like what the fan base wants, too. They're, you know, your boosters, your donors and everything like that, they want to see results. And if you're going in, day out, I mean, realistically, O'Leary could have finished the season off. He wasn't going anywhere. The administration loves him. All he needed to do is just make a change on his coaching staff, and the fans would have been happy. You know, Brent Key down from offensive coordinator back down the line coach, take over position, get rid of Chuck Breshadin, defense coordinator that came in from South Florida. I mean, it's bad that UCF has to get a coordinator from South Florida.
Yeah.
One of the rival schools. Oh yeah, let's bring him in because he came from, you know, the Georgia O'Leary coaching tree. But
maybe they bailed him out of jail. Maybe they bailed the USF coach out of jail. You never know. See, that's right. I made some USF jokes. I got jokes. Anyways.
Realistically, I mean, it's a common thing going on with colleges and everything like that. To get rid of the coaches, it was surprising. I think it was North Texas was the first one to fire their coach this year after like the third week.
Yeah, I remember that too.
So, I mean, when North Texas fires their coach for it, you know it's going to be bad.
Well, I'll put it this way. I asked if it was for PR, and then you said it was to please the fans and the boosters. I don't know any more important PR that could be had for a football program at a college than those two sets of people. And I'll leave it at that. All right. I've stalled long enough. Let's get past this Thursday game. Speaking of natural disasters, the Seahawks and the 49ers played. Chris, go.
In an uneventful NFC West matchup, the Seahawks won 20-3 over the San Francisco 49ers. Both defenses wreaked havoc in the game, combining for 11 sacks, but it was a healthier Marshawn Lynch returning to the lineup. That was the difference, as well as the poor offensive line play for the Niners. Marshawn Lynch had almost as many rushing yards as the Niners had of total offense. Lynch finished with 122 yards and 27 carries with a touchdown. The Niners had a total of 142 yards of offense. The Seahawks defense probably playing the best they have all year, but it's still not that great because they forced zero turnovers against the Niners. Really, the win for the Seahawks gets credit, I still think, by the Niners' poor offensive line.
Agreed.
With Kaepernick getting sacked six times in the game and the pocket collapsing quickly, which was forcing him to hurry his throws.
So,
Russell Wilson, what was that?
No, go ahead. I thought you were done. That's my bad.
No, Russell Wilson was completed 75% of his passes. Well, if you count his 2 INTs he threw, he completed 80% of his passes. He finished 18 for 24, 235 yards with a touchdown. The touchdown was the rookie Tyler Lockett, which he finished with 79 yards.
Which, by the way, all the criticism I make of Russell Wilson on the show as an overrated player, that pass to Lockett was damn nice. That was a great pass.
Yeah, it was much better than it was last week when they tried to play when they ran the MFFF, say it for that radio show, my old Sandlot play. He underthrew Lockett to catch the ball.
That's it. Hand off to the running back, and the running back does this back to the quarterback, and then the guy throws it. And, that was not a good throw. This was a great throw.
All right. Yeah, difference in the game is third downs. Niners were 1-for-11. The Seahawks were 5-for-13. The Seahawks were also 1-for-1 in the red zone, as the Niners were 0-for-1. Time of possession also was in favor for the Seahawks, as they had 38 minutes to 22 minutes for the Niners.
Yeah, that's a huge gap. Speaking of gaps, so I'm looking at the standings for the NFC. And look, I will admit that I'm going to look particularly stupid on two of my playoff predictions. One, of course, is the Dolphins. The other is the Seahawks, who I believe I picked to return to the Super Bowl. And I think I had them winning it, too. Are they even, do you take them seriously even as a playoff contender at this point?
The Seahawks?
Yeah.
You know, the way they've been playing, the games they've lost, I don't see them really making the playoffs.
Yeah.
I really don't. I mean, really, with the loss of Dan Quinn, their defensive coordinator to Atlanta Falcons, has hurt this team more than anything else. I mean, really, they haven't lost anyone on defense. Yeah, they lost two offensive linemen, which is kind of hurting. Marshawn Lynch has been banged up, but I mean, what is he, 32 years old, 33 years old? You're relying on Russell Wilson to throw the ball. Yeah, you got Jimmy Graham, too, but they're underutilizing him. But really, this defense isn't as scary as it used to be.
That's true. Well, and see, here's the thing. So you look through the records of the NFC, and today the two teams that would be wild card eligible are the Falcons and the Vikings. Now, while I would rather see the Seahawks and the Falcons in a playoff game, they're two games out of it right now, they're one game out, one and a half, because bye weeks. They're a half game out of it, one and a half games out with the Vikings. I don't see them doing it today, and then, of course, you never know what's going to kind of come out of the East if, you know, the Eagles decide to not suck for a consistent period of time. Don't rule out the Rams. They're 3-3 themselves and only one game back. I don't know. It's I'll put it this way. To an extent, the Seahawks will be able to control their fate if they manage to beat the Rams the second game, which right now the Rams hold the tiebreak thanks to week one. But I don't know. Seahawks are in the running for biggest disappointment, which, by the way, midseason awards 2 weeks away, folks. Just saying. Anyways, so something else that we thought was 2 weeks away was the Miami Dolphins redemption, question mark? How do you go from being a team that's trying to break records for giving up the most points in a game or in a half, then getting the most points in a game or in a half? That's coming out with new coach Dan Campbell in his second game and winning 44-26 over the Houston Texans. I guess that's one way to do it. Ryan Tannehill continued to do what he did, missing on only one pass, which is Jordan Cameron's fault because he should have used two hands reaching for it, and broke a streak that started last game where he threw 25 straight completions over those two games and then only missed one pass. Had a perfect quarterback rating with four touchdowns as well. I mean, but yeah, it's the Texans. I get it. They suck. Fine. But, you know, the biggest news for the Texans in this game is not good. Arian Foster out for the season. What looks to be, I believe, an Achilles injury. Yeah, I mean, he did contribute, still managed to get two touchdowns in the game before his exit, one running, one receiving. But still another what's a bigger story, Chris? Pop quiz. Tannehill doing his thing or Lamar Miller tearing it up on the ground two games in a row?
I think it's really Lamar Miller tearing it on the ground, you know, 2 weeks in a row. Also, I mean, a lot of Tannehill's yards and passes were, you know, the yard after the catches. Jarvis Landry, you know, taking a little 10-yard out pattern and returning, taking it 50 yards.
Richard Matthews, but he ran,
you know,
like
on a slant pattern, outrunning everyone 53 yards.
Yeah.
Lamar Miller kicking a screen, and really the Jarvis Landry and the Lamar Miller, you know, 54-yard pass, really the credit goes to the O-line. I mean, with Jarvis Landry, he had Pouncey, the starting center, at the goal line, Landry's recovering, still making a block. And there's another offensive lineman down there inside the 5-yard line.
20 yards
him.
Down the field, at least.
Great. Lamar Miller, same thing. I mean, on a screen pattern there, the offensive line's out in front of him, 40 yards down the field, still doing blocks. So, I mean, you got to credit the offensive line in this. I mean, also, you can credit the piss poor tackling by the Houston Texans, you know, what's going on with this defense. Because, I mean, the Jarvis Landry 50-yard pass went in on the out pattern. I mean, he just juked the corner. Cushing was out of position trying to make a play. And then he just ran around everybody else and got a few blocks from offensive linemen, and also with Rashard Matthews gave a block down there at the goal line.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, man. The part that I found most interesting about the Jarvis Landry run was the fact that he ran basically what seemed like 80 yards to get 50. But, I mean, look, the unfortunate thing for Dan Campbell is this. Everyone's going to be riding high these 2 weeks, and he did have the advantage of playing two weak teams to tune up, and then he's going to come out and have to play the Patriots. Crap. Now, Grant, they got softened up a little bit by playing the Jets last week. We'll get into that later. Or rather, I shouldn't say last week, but yesterday. But, you know, I'll put it this way. I see Dan Campbell winning six more games, which would make Miami fans kind of unhappy. Or six games total, I should say, not six more. Which would then put them at 7-9 and make for an unhappy Dolphins fan base, because they've seen enough 7-9 and 8-8 in the past few years. So, you know, this whole thing is a wash, I guess. I don't know. So, all right.
Yeah, but I mean, a couple things with Dan Campbell, he did. When he came in here, his first thing is he fired defense coordinator Kevin Coyle. Right after he got promoted up for that Monday, Tuesday, when he came back from London, that Thursday, he fired Kevin Coyle. And he reassigned some of the coaches, you know, made the positions. Then what he did was he sat down with Domkin Sue and said, you know, what can we do, you know, to make better? You know, he got input from this, you know, all-pro defense tackle he spent tons of money on to get, asking for his input. Well, just him asking for his input Dongasoo, you know, started showing up the last 2 weeks. This past week, he had 2 sacks. I mean, he wreaked havoc on that offensive, you know, the Texans offensive line. So the changes he made, Dan Campbell, you know, it's kind of going in favor when they're saying, oh, we want a new culture here and there. You know, he might be a new culture. I mean, those 6 wins will give him enough how these players have been playing, you know, to have him land this coaching job at the end of the year.
Yeah, I mean, it's still too soon for me to make that call, okay? I mean, if the interview were today, all he has to do is slam Lamar Miller's running numbers on the table, and he has a good shot at getting the job, let's be real, for 30 seconds. But, I mean, I can't talk going to get the job at the end of the year for beating up on two vastly inferior teams. I can't do that. The Patriots obviously are a good test. I think it's actually too soon to take that game seriously. What I want to see is the next games against the Bills and the Jets, these revenge games, and what he does with those. That's what I find the most compelling, and I think that'll be the biggest part of his resume in the rest of the 2015 season. So, speaking of the rest of the 2015 season, another team that's made a turnaround of late, started out strong beating the Seahawks, but kind of went home earlier on, and thanks to Todd, I'm not a girly man, the Rams triumph once again. Sure, it's only the Browns that they beat, but they did so 24-6. Todd Gurley going over 100 yards again with 2 touchdowns, scoring his first NFL touchdown in this contest with 19 carries. And then overall for the Browns, Josh McCown lost 2 fumbles, left the game early with a shoulder injury. Foles only had to manage the game, but let's call it what it is. The Browns just unable to move the ball with great regularity. Sure, their third down conversions was better than the Rams, who were only at 1-9, but that just tells me they didn't need a lot of third down conversions. The red zone, 0-for-1 were the Browns, 2-for-3 were the Rams. And of course, if you have a defense that's forcing fumbles and getting turnovers and giving you better field position, it'll make your offensive numbers look like they're far more stagnant than they are. Manziel didn't really have much of a contribution. He only had 5 passing plays himself. He did complete 4, but let's put it this way, at that point in the game, didn't really matter so much. Gary Barnridge, still doing things, had another 100-yard game receiving with 8 catches for the Browns. Look, at the end of the day, pop quiz, Chris. I mentioned it earlier. I didn't really get an answer, so I'm going to get an answer from you now. The Rams are currently the most dangerous team on the outside of the playoff picture looking in. True or false?
I'd say true. The only thing that's really hurting them is Nick Foles, the quarterback. I mean, really, with Todd Gurley, the running back, you know, they took a chance reaching for him in the 10th pick overall in the draft coming off of the ACL tear that he had in college. Really, he was a beast over in Georgia. So you can see that he's healthy. What are you doing there, especially with that defense there? I mean, we always talk about how good the Rams defense is there. And then also, really surprisingly, their offensive line, how well they played. They're all new. The first time they're playing together this year too, and they're opening up holes for Todd Gurley, which you'll need many, you know, big of a hole, because you just need to give him that half second to get through, and then he's going to do it himself. But I think they are one of the most dangerous teams looking out outside looking in of what they can do. I mean, look, they beat the Seahawks in Week 1. They beat the Cards when the Cards were demolishing everybody. And then this week, you know, it was just another good week for them. I mean, this is a team that Jeff Fisher kind of, you know, liked to have, the speed on defense with the skill positions he has.
You know, you said one of, I didn't say one of, I said the most dangerous team outside looking in, and I maintain that because I can't take the Eagles seriously, and, well, I can't figure out the Giants, and we'll get into both those teams later, but we'll go from one Jeff Fisher team to a former Jeff Fisher team, and that's the Falcons taking on the Tennessee Titans. Now, I didn't figure to have to spend a lot of time watching this game until I saw that the score stayed in favor of the Titans as long as it did. Hope you took the under on this game as the Falcons continue to under-impress, crawling past the Tennessee Titans 10-7. So two stat lines, Chris. 22 for 35, 187 with a touchdown and three interceptions, or 22 for 38, 250 yards, a touchdown and two interceptions. Which one is Matt Ryan? I don't know. They're both bad. And the fact that it's
good. Yeah, I think the second one.
The second one is Matt Ryan.
One touchdown, two interceptions.
That's right. And it's comparable to Zach Mettenberger. That's my point. One touchdown, three interceptions. Of course, the extra interception being the only real difference. Devontae Freeman continued to produce, 25 for 116. And for those fantasy owners that have Julio Jones, 9 for 92 with a touchdown. So despite the fact that Matt Ryan didn't necessarily have a great game, he's still got your points. The Falcons continue to unimpress me. Unimpress me. I guess that's a standing verb now. Whatever. The point is this. I want to see them play the Panthers. And I want to see what happens. And, you know, I don't want to get too much in the Panthers now because we'll talk about them later in the show. But Dan Quinn is getting props for doing something with this team that couldn't compete in a division that had a losing division winner. And by losing, I mean 7-9. I'm not impressed. How many times did I use the word unimpressed or not impressed? I don't know. Seems like a lot. I counted 5. I'm just saying that people who take the Falcons seriously have yet to give me a good answer other than they have a really good offense. Okay. You know. Anyways, enough of that. So, speaking of games that, how you say, weren't exactly what they should have been, the Bucs came out to face off against the Washington Redskins and it all looked simple. 24-0 was the score. Unfortunately, the Bucs would lose the rest of the game and the game itself, 31-6. 31-30, your final score. The Buccaneers unable to deliver. Jameis Winston did not have a bad game per se, 21 for 29, 297 yards and two touchdowns. A quarterback in an effort whose first quarter offense produced 200 or so yards. That's kind of insane. And then Doug Martin went 18 for 136. The only thing I can think of here is that the Bucs went home early, so early, in fact, that they might have had some delay of game penalties as they weren't on the field. 142 total yards, and I believe, Chris, it was 16 penalties for the Buccaneers. Just dramatically unacceptable. Also, still leaving points on the board. 1 for 3 in the red zone where they, while the Skins were 4 for 5. Kirk Cousins throwing the ball 40 times as he did, which was 33 for 40, by the way. He had 317 yards and 3 touchdowns. Should spell disaster, and it was not. You know, I'll say this much. If it were up to me, which it weren't, but I would have already fired Lovie Smith. But do you think Lovie Smith coaching this year is better than what he was doing with the Bucs last year? I'm just asking.
Yeah, I think they're a little more competitive this year than it was last year. When I saw like the injury report came out and they showed that Tim Jennings was like probable or he was out for the game or whatever. Well, that made just their secondary a little better there because he's been getting beat left and right the last couple of weeks. Still the defense, they got some good defensive playmakers over there. I mean, linebacker corps pretty decent. Defensive line's, you know, pretty good. But give up, you know, 24 points in the second half to the Washington Redskins to lose. Especially when you had over 200 yards of offense in the first half, in the first quarter alone, you know, there's something wrong. You got to make some kind of change there.
You Iraq a disappearing. That's pretty much what it comes down to. That's what I'm gonna say. That's where I stay at. I don't know. Anyway, that was pretty much it. I mean, I'm still a guy who thought, you know, that the Bucs would do worse than this. So perhaps that's the way I should look at it. But I don't know. Anyways, Raiders, Chargers. So there are some out there that still don't believe in Derek Carr, the guy we know on this show as DC4. I was talking to one of them this past weekend, former Student of the Game panelist, Chris, the special agent of sports, Chris Rizzo, says he doesn't believe in Derek Carr. Then he proceeds to go out and go 24-31, 289 yards with 3 touchdowns in a shootout game with Phillip Rivers. Sure, Latavius Murray did his job on the ground. 15-85. He had a touchdown. Also, Tywan Jones had a touchdown as well on one of his 3 carries. I mean, what is that? 18 carries for 120 yards. Balanced offense is a good thing. We've talked on this show, Chris, about how soft the Chargers defense is, and I think the Raiders has pretty much proved it. You know, once again, the Chargers throw the ball 58 times. Rivers did have a good game with 336 yards and 3 touchdowns. Did throw 2 interceptions. Obviously, the difference on the day. And the Raiders could have even widened the gap. They were 1-for-4 in the red zone versus 2-for-2 were the Chargers. I think the Chargers' biggest problem, just as I have since the days of Donnie Abraham and company, is that defense. They're just I don't give me Eric Weddle, okay? Shut up with the Eric Weddle. I never understood that. But I feel like this defense is still letting this team down. You looked earlier on, Chris, like you looked last year, and who was the heir apparent for the division, right? It was the Chargers. I mean, am I wrong there?
No, you're right. I mean, last couple of years, they had a decent team. I mean, you all know what you're getting out of Kansas City. Oakland's been the bottom dweller since they've lost the Super Bowl over 10 years ago. So, I mean, Chargers, this should have been their year. I mean, they were getting people back. They lost Ryan Matthews, but, you know, they picked up a rookie in Melvin Gordon. So, you know, that's why they got rid of Ryan Matthews. I mean, you had Keenan Allen still. You still have Malcolm Floyd, which has been unproductive since, you know, he came back from injury. He picked up Stevie Johnson, who's had, you know, first quarter of the season decent numbers for being MIA last year.
Yeah, and the Chargers' decline is just apparent. I mean, let's put it this way. I think we're both in agreement that Peyton Manning's going to retire this year. And who knows? The team that picks up that mantle may be one of silver and black as that flag waves side to side in the hands of one DC4 Derek Carr. I don't know. Granted, that's just one game, and the physics in the West are funky. But you do have an undefeated Broncos team currently atop that division. Trying to crawl back into it is a very difficult prospect. I'm just saying. Anyways, moving to the Vikings and the Lions. Chris, if I were to say to you, who's the most important piece of the Vikings offense, what would your answer be without hesitation?
Adrian Peterson.
Until he goes 18-for-23. Now, in fairness, I did take out his 175-yard run, but that's kind of the point. In this game, Adrian Peterson was relatively quiet, and other than a lost fumble, Teddy Bridgewater. I guess the Vikings were ready for Teddy. 25-for-35, 316 yards, 2 touchdowns. Pretty strong game all the way around. I have to give credit, though, to the Vikings defense sacking Matt Stafford 6 times. You know, one downside, the offense of the Vikings was 1-for-4 in the red zone. That's not impressive. But giving up 6 sacks to the Vikings defense and going 1-for-10 on third down, you can't move the ball like that. And that could have been what led to the firing of Detroit Lions offensive coordinator Joe Lombardi. And for those that are asking, yes, there is a relationship. That is Vince Lombardi's grandson. That's a rough go when you have that name Lombardi and you get fired. That just feels like it's a lot of extra pressure. Is that just me? you can't fire me. Oh, maybe it's some sort of a curse thing, right? Because Lombardi coached the Packers, and then the Lions are like the Packers' rivals. Does that – no? Maybe not?
Maybe?
Okay. It's not that bad a theory. It just got really quiet, and I got really self-conscious.
Yeah. Yeah, they also fired offensive line coach Jeremiah Washburn too.
Yeah, that's probably a good move. It's probably a good move. That protection has not been good, and though he's not necessarily slow and he can move around a little bit in the pocket, I would not call Matt Stafford fast. That is not And it's not a particular adjective that comes to my mind. So, yeah. I'll say this. The Lions defense, to be honest, is outperformed. But the Lions offense is underperformed. I think that's a fair assessment. What about you, Chris?
Yes. I mean, I was saying before, the Lions secondary is horrible. I've been saying that for weeks now. But then their offense, you know, they jumped out that early lead, and I was like, I was shocked when I saw the update after the first quarter, and the Lions were up 14-3. I'm like, wow, they're up 14-3 against the Vikings. Then all of a sudden, you know, the Vikings started chipping away at it, and next thing you know, the Vikings were up, and they won the game. So, I mean, yeah, the defense held them in check in the first couple of weeks. I mean, they're doing pretty well, you know, holding Adrian Peterson under 100 yards, even though he had that one long 75-yard run. Like you said, the 18 for 23, that was 2 weeks in a row. He hasn't had that many yards after week two and three and four. He had a good week, you know, those good weeks. These last couple weeks, he hasn't. So, I mean, defense is playing decent. They just, Lions, there's no running game. I mean, you get that rookie, Amir Abdullah. He was turning heads in preseason. Next thing you know, he's you know, barely getting yards. He's averaging 5 yards a carry, but they're not, you know, they're only running the ball 17 times total with a bunch of different running backs.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, it didn't help that Theo Reddick did drop a pass at the end of the game that would have kept the Lions in competition, but I ain't putting that on him. It's just an unfortunate situation. Nobody really expected much for the Lions this season, but it almost feels like they're going back to the way of life that used to be the Lions with, you know, just having a tough culture of losing and struggling and all that. So, anyways, we're going to be going over the game that happened in London next, so we need to take a little time to travel, so we'll get a break right here. You're listening to NGSC Sports. You're listening to NGSC Sports Radio. Hear us live on NGSCSports.com, where you can get awesome analysis for all things sport. Or check out our podcasts on iHeartRadio, Spreaker, iTunes, TuneIn, and much more. For our latest videos, head to NGSC Sports YouTube channel. Follow us on Twitter at NGSC Sports and like us on Facebook. NGSC Sports, we never stop. Coming back here, this is Kyle Nash, Assume the Game, and I am talking with local hero and fire safety purveyor, Mr. Chris Rankin. Chris, man, so I get that you're, you know, you and I are UCF alum, you are a UCF follower, one might say. Walk us through this Bills-Jags game, because I looked at this, and I was watching some of this game on Yahoo, by the way. Tell me about it. Tell me about this game.
All right. In the second London game of the year, the Jags jumped out to a 27-3 second quarter lead just to see it slip away in the fourth quarter. Blake Bortles in the fourth quarter threw another pick six. It's third of the season, and the Bills took a 31-27 lead with just over 5 minutes left in the game. He would rebound and drive his team down the field and hit Allen Hurns for the go-ahead touchdown with just over 2 minutes left. And the Jags D would hold on to a 34-27 victory over the Bills. Bad performance for the Bortles, as he was 13-29 for 182 yards and 2 touchdowns with INT. EJ Manuel in 24-42, 298 yards, 2 touchdowns, 2 INTs, and a lost fumble. One of those interceptions was a pick six as well, so there's a total of 2 pick six in the game. Also, the fumble he lost was returned by Chris Clemens for a touchdown. So, I mean, that was 14 points right there for the Jags defense of those 27. LeSean McCoy had 18 carries for 68 yards, but he also lost the fumble for the Bills. Rookie T.J. Yeldon for the Jags returned from injury, had 20 carries for 115 yards with a touchdown. Allen Robinson, you know, having breakout year this year, 98 yards with a touchdown. Al Hearns chipped in with 53 and a score for the Jags. Robert Woods had 9 for 84 for the Bills, and Marcus Easley had a 58-yard touchdown catch. Difference in the game was the 4 turnovers for the Bills, 1 for the Jags, and not just the turnovers, but the points of turnovers. Jags had 2 defensive scores, as I mentioned, and they also put the ball in the end zone from the other 2 turnovers that they were forced. But realistically, you know, they had 4 touchdowns in there, 27 points. So you know there's a missed extra point. So if you want to cue the music.
Wait, oh wait. I love this part. The newest member of the Hall of Shame. Who we got, Chris?
Actually, it'd be his returning back to the Wall of Shame would be the Jags kicker Jason Myers, as he once again missed an extra point.
Wait, he's
when the score was 27-3. The Bills came back right after that, scored a touchdown, then kicked another field goal right before the half. It kind of gave the Bills a little momentum with that extra point miss.
I thought they cut Jason Myers after he lost the game to the Colts.
Wow. No, he's still on there.
You know what? You know who else needs to go on the Wall of Shame? The GM for the Jags. How is Steve? He still have a job at the NFL, but Josh Scobie doesn't. I'm very confused. So confused. I keep. I make jokes. I'm a keeter. No, I.
Well, yeah. I was thinking that in the Bucs game. I was looking at. I was like, oh man, Bucs coming for a field goal. Oh, they miss. Oh wait, I forgot. They got rid of their kicker. They got Connor Barth. They don't make it.
Yeah, exactly.
But there is actually another, talking about the Wall of Shame, there was another kicker in the Wall of Shame, and that was the Dolphins kicker as well. And they scored 41 offensive points in the first half.
So, yeah, that kept it from being 42-0 instead of 41-0. So unless you're a fan of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy and know that the number 42 is the answer to the question of everything in the universe, yeah, that kick not mattering quite as much as anything Jason Myers has done lately. I'm gonna throw that out there. Being said, I mean we'll still put his spot on the wall. We'll just put it very low. I don't know, man.
We'll keep him at per week so that the names are up there multiple times, like the Texans kicker.
Yeah, he's missed a few himself, so. But we mention all these missed kicks and all these sad teams to remind you that there's a team out there that is still atop the AFC South, despite losing another game this week. The Saints overcome the Colts 27-21 in Lucas Oil Stadium in Indianapolis. And really, the thing I find interesting is that at some point in this game, there was a fake field goal touchdown by the Saints, and that makes the difference in the entire contest. I get it. Andrew Luck had 2 interceptions. Granted, he went 24 for 33, 333 yards and 3 touchdowns. That's a lot of threes. But a fake field goal? All of the special teams' gaffes of the past 2 weeks, you look at the fake punt fail. That was Griff Whalen snapping the ball to Griff Anderson in an overshifted line and all that. Well, Griff Whalen had a fumble on a kick return, so he's, you know, doing great 2 for 2 weeks with a special teams blunder. And then the Colts special teams allows a fake field goal touchdown. This could have something to do with the fact that the GM had a very heated discussion in the locker room after this game with owner Jim Irsay. I really don't know. What the Colts do here. I'm still not in that place where I'm going to blame Andrew Luck for this. Yeah, he gets more turnovers than he should, but so did Brett Favre, and, well, Brett Favre was worshipped, so I don't get it. You know, for me, more proof that the Colts defense needs work. Mark Ingram running up and down the field, 14 yards, 114 carries, 143 yards and a touchdown. Kyrie Robinson having 2 red zone touchdowns of his own. I mean, yeah, Frank Gore went for 5 yards of carry. I don't know, Chris. Do you think they're utilizing Frank Gore enough for the Colts?
No, I've been saying it for weeks. They haven't been. I mean, he's really not touching the ball that much. during the game. They're not using him out of the backfield. They're barely handing the ball. I mean, he averaged 5 yards a carry. What do you have, like eight carries or something like that?
He had 13 carries for 75 yards.
Right. So, I mean, that's a pretty good gauge. Why don't you give him the ball like about seven more times and add on another 35 yards, have him break 100 for the first time this year. Maybe he'll score a touchdown there, which could be the difference.
You know, he did have his struggles earlier in the year. He did have some fumbles in the red zone, but I don't know. I'm wondering where this is a player problem or a coaching problem, and Pagano's or the offensive coordinator's strategy is not prepared for the concept of what you do with a Frank Gore. They've been so long without a good running back. Do they know what to do with one? Maybe that's a fair question. I don't know.
I mean, yeah, you were down 20-0 at one point in the game. And then, you know, of course you got to go throw the ball, but I mean, really, you run the ball only 13 times and three of them were Andrew Luck. So, you know, those were just QB draws. So really 10 times, you know, out of 57 plays, the offense coordinator really needs to just stop trying to throw the ball deep to T.Y. Hilton all the time. Use some of these bigger receivers, the Kobe Fleener, Dwayne Allen, Andre Johnson. I mean, he paid the money to get Andre Johnson this year. I mean, Frank Gore did have 5 catches for 32 yards out of the backfield, so that was pretty good. But, you know, using big bodies, I mean, Dwayne Allen only gets 1 target for 10 yards. Kobe Fleener gets 5 targets. He gets 3 for 47. Andre Johnson, you know, 4 targets. He had 4 catches. You know, T.Y. Hilton, 15 targets. He had 4 receptions.
Yeah, I mean,
take some of those T.Y. Hilton ones and give them over to Andre Johnson. You can still use T.Y. Hilton. I mean, you know, for that deep ball and everything like that. I mean, he did have 2 touchdowns and an 87-yard touchdown catch. He just made the defender just look stupid out there as he kept cutting back and forth. Center didn't know which way he was going, in, out, which way. And he just ran in for a touchdown.
I mean, it sounds like with the way they're passing, they might be setting up the run. They just don't do it.
Right, and I mean that's the way it's been saying. You know, you throw the ball, set up the run. You run the ball, throw up, set up the pass. But realistically, you're the Colts. They know you're going to throw the ball, so then you just turn around and let's hand Frank Gore the ball 20 times next game. See how many yards you can get on that. I mean, he had 9 rushes for 43 yards.
There you go. I don't know, man, but hey. Let's think of it this way. This game actually mattered very significantly in the NFC East, which really actually doesn't say a whole lot because the NFC East has looked so great. Not really. The Giants and the Cowboys. Chris, take us through it.
Yeah, the Giants found themselves in a familiar situation in a week one matchup with division rivals Cowboys, and that was letting a fourth quarter lead slip away. Cowboys tied the game at 20, and then Dwayne Harris returned the kickoff 100 yards for a touchdown with 7 minutes left to play. Matt Castle getting the start, drove the Cowboys into the Giant territory. Jason Garrett electing to go for it on 4th and 8 with just under 2 minutes left. The Giants defense would come up with a stop. The only thing was that the Cowboys still had 3 timeouts left, and the Giants offense only had 20 yards of offense in the fourth quarter. They went 3 and out while the Cowboys used all their turnovers, and the Giants had to punt the ball with about 1:30 left, and Cole Beasley would fumble or muff the punt, and the Giants gunner, Miles White, would recover the ball, and Giants won 27-20.
Duh. I thought that was appropriate.
Yeah, especially the way he's trying to catch the punt, too. I mean, his hands were up instead of underneath the ball coming up. I don't know what he did, but, I mean, really, the Giants gunner, Miles White, when he grabbed the ball, he turned, he held on to that ball, you know, like it was his newborn son. No one's getting this away from me. It's mine. You know, or you can say, you know, the fat guy eating a Twinkie or something. You're not getting away from that from him either, but... Matt Cassell didn't have that great of a day, 17 for 27, 227 yards with a touchdown, but he had 3 INTs. One of them was returned for a touchdown by Dominic Rogers-Cromartie for 58 yards. Eli Manning have another poor performance day coming off an embarrassing Monday night loss. It was 13 for 24 for only 170 yards. The Cowboys lost the running back Joseph Randle early in the game to an injury. So in came Darren McFadden, which Giants couldn't stop the run because McFadden had 29 carries for 152 yards and a touchdown. For the Giants, running back Orleans Darkwa had 8 carries for 48 yards with a touchdown.
That's such a great name, Orleans Darkwa. I don't know. Anyways, keep going.
Yeah. Jason Witten, 6 catches, 73 yards. Terrence Williams chipped in for 4 for 70. Devin Street had a 25-yard touchdown catch. Reuben Randle had 68 receiving yards for the Giants. Really, the difference in the game was 4 for the turnovers, was 4 for the Cowboys, 0 for the Giants. But realistically, facing the Giants were outplayed in this game. They gave up 27 first downs, couldn't stop the run, gave up a total of 460 yards to the Cowboys with Matt Cassell at quarterback. And also, the Cowboys had 38 minutes of possession to the Giants, 22. Giants offense really struggling 2 weeks in a row, especially in the second half, not doing anything. Giants defense, 6 interceptions in the past 2 weeks, and offense can't capitalize on it. Really, Giants special teams and defense won this game for them as they had that kickoff return for a touchdown, also an interception for a touchdown. Otherwise, it should have been a blowout by the Cowboys if you're looking at stats.
Yeah, I mean, the kickoff return for the touchdown sealed the game. Essentially, and I'll just ask it, Chris. I mean, you as the Giants fan, do you feel like if Brandon Weeden was in this football game and they weren't asking Matt Cassell to make long throws, deep throws down the field, that the Cowboys would have won this game like they did the first two quarters of the game in week one where they played each other?
Yeah, I think they did. I mean, just I don't know what's going on with this Giants offense. I mean, it's like the team's blitzing the other thing. The offensive line is just horrible. They don't know what they're doing. They can't get the running game going. Giants, you know, Eli's bad. Missing the receivers wide, low, whatever. I mean, he's getting flustered back there. Even if when he does have time, he misthrows the ball. Trying to force it into Odell Beckham. Reuben Randle had a drop that should have been a touchdown. They had to settle for a field goal on that one. So, I mean, Cowboys should have won this game, even if they had, you know, with Weeden, how Weeden's played the last couple weeks. Weeden had a better QBR rating. He liked QBR ratings. He had a lot better QBR rating than Matt Cassell. So Matt Cassell, I think, was like 19. Weeden was around in the 60s. So,
right.
Yeah, it should have been a loss by the Giants, like they did last Monday night with the Eagles, as the Eagles were trying to give the ball away from, you know, trying to give the game to the Giants. And Giants like, no, we don't want it. We're just going to throw the ball into the dirt so you guys can take the ball back. You know, three and out.
Yeah, I still don't believe in any of the teams in the NFC. Right now, I mean, the Redskins, the Eagles, well, we'll get to them in a little bit later. And the Giants, you just don't know what they are. I feel like just 2 weeks ago, we were talking about how they're 2 self-inflicted gunshot wounds to the metatarsals. See, that's your toes. Away from 5-0. In other words, they were shooting themselves in the foot. Then they come out and lay that egg on Monday night. Then they do this. Yeah, I get it. They won. But they beat Matt Cassell, who looked terrible. I would suspect that the Cowboys are going to start him next week, and I'm not necessarily against that, considering who they have as the opponent. But I guess they're hoping that Matt Cassell will improve, question mark? I don't know. Well, I mean, obviously they're hoping he'll improve, but anyways. Speaking of hope that a new quarterback will improve, the Steelers went into Kansas City. Many thought it was an improbable chance for the Chiefs to win without Jamaal Charles. Such not the case. In the House of the Arrowhead, the Chiefs prevail over the Steelers 23-13. Now, the Steelers were starting third stringer Landry Jones, former Oklahoma star. He had a lost fumble and 2 interceptions. Sure, he threw for 209 yards and a touchdown, but contributed to the only three turnovers of the game. Alex Smith did what a checkdown king of the checkdown does. He had 251 yards with a touchdown. And I'll note that said touchdown was actually to a wide receiver. Woohoo! Let's celebrate. Anyways, so Le'Veon Bell, of course, carried most of the load for the Steelers in the run game. He had 121 rushing yards on 17 carries. But Charcandrick West. See, did I say it right, Chris?
Charcandrick, yes, you did.
See, I need to tape that little bit for a weasel so he could be a... How do you say Charcandrick West? Anyways, 22 carries, 110 yards, and a touchdown, carrying the weight on the ground for the Chiefs in Jamaal Charles' absence. I got to give you props. That's a tough role to play, especially against the Steelers' defense, which is pretty talented. Overall, other than the turnovers, the offense of the Steelers was 2 for 10 on third down, as the Chiefs were 9 for 16 on third down. That's a pretty good number. Martavius Bryant, of course, with the only touchdown for the Steelers, but a lot of fantasy owners out there happier that Vic is no longer the quarterback. 6 catches for Antonio Brown for 124 yards. Chris, I'll be honest. I think the Steelers have a pretty good shot at making the playoffs still, and that this might be at best a hiccup, especially since Ben Roethlisberger is back. With Ben Roethlisberger back, Chris, and if they were to play the Chiefs, let's say in week 10, after Ben Roethlisberger had a chance to get the dust off a little bit, does this Steelers squad beat the New England Patriots with Ben at the helm?
Beat New England Patriots? You know, they played them well in week one. They didn't have Le'Veon Bell, but they did have D'Angelo Williams, who had a pretty good game. It'll be close because you just don't know the schemes that the Patriots play all the time.
Right.
I don't know. The way the Patriots have been playing lately, I don't think so. I don't think the Steelers' defense is good enough. But I would have to kind of lean towards no.
Yeah, well, I'll put it this way. They would have been able to do the fundamental things like, you know, make sure somebody's covering Gronk. Just saying. Anyways, the Eagles went over to Carolina to face off against the Panthers. You know, I've said it, Chris, maybe not on this show, but on other shows I used to be on through the years. Maybe even on this show, but I'll say it again now. My standing theory to Chip Kelly offenses, even going back to the days of Oregon, was that all they had to do was play against a tough team and they would be thwarted. Considering the fact that the Panthers, and I threw this out there that they were possibly the toughest team in the NFL, and I think as a consensus, as a group, we said that they were top three. This could be a way to test my theory of the Chip Kelly offense outside of the college football bounds. This game serves to prove me right. 27-16, the Panthers prevail over the Eagles, and basically it was by muscling them. I mean, that's what I say. Yes, Cam Newton had 3 interceptions. 2 of them, however, were interceptions where the ball was ripped away from the receiver and really only count on his stats because of reasons. 14 for 24. Of course, that should be 16 for 24 because, again, interceptions ripped away from the receivers. 197 yards and a touchdown, but Cam carried the ball 4 times for 20 yards and a touchdown. Jonathan Stewart had 24 carries for 125 yards. And Tolver, their fullback, 3 carries for 16 yards and a touchdown and also a touchdown pass. And, of course, many more blocks to opening up that game. Tom Tolbert, look, I'm just trying to tell you that was a running game that night by the Panthers, simply put, and the Eagles' defense just didn't have the answer for it, and the Panthers on all defense themselves sacked Sam Bradford 5 times. That's not a good look. Props to Ryan Matthews for the Eagles, had 6 carries for 97 yards with a touchdown, including a 63-yarder. For said touchdown. But overall, the Eagles offense just not overly impressive. Sam Bradford managed an INT, threw no touchdowns. and the offense was 0-for-2 in the red zone. So I'll put it this way. The Panthers putting another reason why, or another line in their resume in their interview with me, as being the toughest team in the NFL. But then Chris retorted last week when I said something about the Panthers being the toughest team in the NFL. He came back to me with the New York Jets, and they played against the Patriots. Chris, how'd that game go?
Yeah, the Patriots had no faith in the run game, as they only attempted 6 rushes for 2 yards against the AFC East rival New York Jets. Tom Brady was their leading rusher with 4 carries for 15 yards. 3 of those carries were on scrambles, but he did have a 1-yard touchdown run. Tom Brady had 99.7% of the New England's offense.
Passing.
After 3 shaky quarters, the New England Patriots would come from behind and take a 30-20 lead late in the fourth quarter. Jets would kick a field goal with 18 seconds left. So what do? Onside kick, which was recovered by Brandon Marshall, the second onside kick recovery on the day in the NFL. Fitzpatrick hit Eric Decker across the middle for a 12-yard catch with no timeouts left. You know, in the middle, clock's going to start. Jets tried to run for one more play at the Patriots 37-yard line, but Brandon Marshall wasn't set and was called for illegal ship. And with 1 second left, NFL rule, you know, illegal ship, illegal formation, false starts. Last two minutes, it's a 10-second runoff if you don't have any more timeouts. So Patriots held on to a 30-23 victory to stay undefeated, and the Jets fall to 4-2.
And really, that's the lesser crime on the day for Brandon Marshall, as he dropped the back shoulder touchdown pass for Ryan Fitzpatrick. Could have been the difference in the game. Just saying. I know that Brandon Marshall recovered the onside kick. I didn't really think – I didn't agree with the call that he was offsides or illegal shift or whatever, because he stepped – backwards. I thought you were allowed to move backwards when the ball is snapped. I don't know. So there have been.
I thought personally, when I looked at the replay, I thought he was staying still. I didn't think he was moving when the ball was snapped. Yeah, he was back in time.
Right. By the time it actually snapped, I saw that as a possibility too. But even if he was moving, I thought you were allowed to move backwards. I don't know. Whatever. I didn't think they were going to, you know, take it overtime anyway. So I'll put it this way. We hear about the Jets' defense and how good they are, and they were indeed strong. But I don't care how good you are on defense. If you blitz with 2 players from Rob Gronkowski's side and you leave him open in the middle of the field, just what do you think is going to happen? I mean, you don't need to be Tom Brady to get a touchdown when that's set up for you in the red zone. I mean, right? Am I the only one who thought that was a colossal blunder, or – let me ask you this, Chris. Do you even think that was the play drawn up, or somebody blitzed the quarterback when they weren't supposed to?
No, with this style of defense, I think they go through that. I think someone else has to drop back in coverage. If it was a defensive lineman or a safety supposed to shift over, if they're setting 2, I mean, it's in a safety, maybe – the safety says blitz, linebacker says stay there, or the linebacker's going, someone else is supposed to drop back or shift over in the zone. They blew the coverage on that one with Gronkowski. I mean, he had 11 catches for 108 yards. 15 of it was that touchdown catch to put the Patriots up 30-20. Someone blew something. I don't believe that was their full play there. I think someone was a drop back, most likely, to come over in that area. Or really, the blitz that came from the other side of the field, away from Gronk, because you know Brady's going to be looking for Gronk. So if you come from the backside, you're not going to see, you know, he may not see the blitz. And that's a better chance of getting a turnover.
I don't know. I felt like one of the players who blitzed was supposed to drop back. That's what it looked like to me. But I feel like sometimes these defensive coordinators may be just overthinking themselves. You don't leave, especially when you have a defense who had a corner that open field tackled Gronk one-on-one. You got a team that's able to do that. And then you overthink yourself into, oh, let's put from this side and blah, blah, blah. But again, if it's a player mistake, you know, these guys get paid how much and they still do that? I don't know. Anyways, so we're going to take another quick break while we bring in a very special guest to do the study hall with us with, this week. Weasel, of course, is out recovering some from surgery for his MCL. We wish him well. But we do have his picks, and we will also have the insight of our guest panelist. We'll be back with that here in just a bit. You're listening to The Student of the Game on NGSC Sports. And of course, you're back here on The Student of the Game. We talked about all the Saturday stuff and, you know, there's the whole Cardinals-Ravens thing happening as we speak. But, hey, this is a podcast. You'll listen to this tomorrow anyway. You'd have watched that game and suffered through Joe Flacco playing another terrible performance in the NFL. That's right, I said it. But, more importantly, for this special edition of the Study Hall, we felt bad doing it without Weasel. We felt good doing it with a third person here aboard. And, of course, friend of the show, friend in life, and all-around talent in the sports realm, the burners are lit. The beakers are bubbling. The mad scientist himself, Nick Ficarelli, joins the show. What's going on, Nick?
Let's see. If I add a little bit of nitrous oxide to carbon monoxide, no, it's not right. Oh, hi, everybody. Welcome to the lab.
carbon monoxide?
I'm just trying a little experiment. It's been a while. It's been a long while since I've done, like, crazy experiments and stuff like that. But when I heard I was doing NFL picks, I figured I'd open up the old dusty playbook and go from there.
What you mean a long while? Don't you mean Saturday night? Two nights is too much for you? I mean, if it is, that's cool. That's hardcore. I'm just asking.
I was about to say, Saturday night was the Mad Scientist Sports Lab. When was the last time I was on The Student of the Game?
Hey, you know, hey. When we're back on a live platform, you know, we'll talk about it. Hey, look, if you want to come back for more punishment to be shown how little you know about football, that's a you thing. It's very masochistic, Nick. I'm just saying.
Hey, look, it's not my fault that I'm the one that said that Joe Flacco was an elite quarterback. It's not my fault that I worship at the altar of the Golden Dome in Notre Dame. It's not my fault that I still worship at the altar of Manning, even though he's getting older and longer by the tooth. It's not my fault. Really, it isn't.
Worshipping at the altar of Manning is still okay because he's still going to be a Hall of Famer one day. But anyways, enough of this trivial talk. I'm pretty sure by now we're boring the local hero and firefighter extraordinaire, Chris Rankin, who will be breaking it down with us here. Let's get the study hall going. Do it this way. Chris, go ahead and drop it. You are leading this week. Though I might be creeping up in the standings, I'm still a game back from Weasel, basically because the Giants sucked on Monday. Is that it?
Yeah, that is correct. This week I'm 9-4, Weasel 7-6. You're in one game behind Weasel. I am 3 games up on Weasel as Weasel continues his downward spiral.
I'm creeping up. I'm doing some math there as you say it. I'm 4 games back from you?
Yeah, you're 4 games back from me right now.
No, see, that can't happen. I can't let you repeat. The 4 years before that, I either was the champion or had a share of the championship. Then you had to go and win last year. There's no repeating, unless it's me. Anyways, I vow here the stop will be made. I know we go back, Chris, but... you know, I'm creeping up. Damn it. Drop the list. What's the first game?
First game, Thursday night, you get the Dolphins at the Patriots. Dolphins coming off, you know, 2 weeks with Dan Campbell scoring over 80 points combined in those. They're going to get back to reality this week. I'm going to go with the Patriots just because the Dolphins haven't really played much with the Titans and then the dumpster fire that's the Texans right now. So I got the Patriots. I got Weevil's picks here. He's going with the Dolphins. He's going on that. He jumped on that Dolphins bandwagon with drinking that Dan Campbell Kool-Aid.
I don't know. Look, I don't know. Nick, you'll have to tell me. I don't know if Weasel is sneaking into the lab and getting some sniffs of whatever the hell experiment you were doing with that carbon monoxide, but apparently it's enough for me to get a game this week already. I'll take the Patriots. Nick, who you got?
Weasel is a very, very smart man, and I'll tell you why. Because the mad scientist is going to take the Miami Dolphins in an upset on Thursday night. Look, I understand last week they played two dumpster fires of a team. I totally get it. But this is a team that has come prepared and amazingly has done a complete 180 under Dan Campbell. It just goes to show how bad of a coach Joe Philbin really was. Let me tell you something. I'm very impressed with the way that the Dolphins have been playing the last couple of weeks. There were a little cracks in the system yesterday with the Patriots and the Jets. The Jets let that game get away. That's right. I said it.
Yeah.
I will say it again. Miami in an upset Thursday night.
This will be the second time in a row you're picking that Patriots upset, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Next game, Chris.
Next, you get the Lions at the Chiefs. Lions just getting rid of their offensive coordinator and their offensive line coach. They're hoping that they can turn around this season this year, maybe do what the Dolphins done the last 2 years. They are playing against a Jamaal Charles-less Chiefs. Also, Chiefs, you know, don't throw too many passes to their receivers in the end zone. So I am going to go with the Lions in the upset on this one.
I don't know that either team winning this game is truly an upset, but since he's second place, what's Weasel's pick?
Weasel will be picking the Lions as well.
Yeah, I don't share your optimism on this offense. well, of course, both offenses kind of suck, but I'm still impressed how Charkandrick West actually ran the football with the kind of yardage you would expect the Jamaal Charles to get. I'm not saying he's that good a player. I'm just saying that's what he did. Being said, it'll be the team that makes more mistakes, and it's Matt Stafford versus the king of the checkdown. I got the Chiefs winning this game. I'm sorry. Nick, what do you got?
I got the Kansas City Chiefs. You want to talk about dumpster fire, look no further than the Detroit Lions. When you have an offense that's supposed to have all these weapons at their disposal, I don't care. You can blame the offensive coordinator. You can blame the offensive line coach. Hell, you can blame the water boy for all I care. It's the players on the field that cannot execute the game plan properly. And let's put it like this, gentlemen. Detroit would not be one in six if it weren't for them playing the Chicago Bears, even more of a dumpster fire a couple of weeks ago. I'm going with the Chiefs. And by the way, Kyle, very well said on Charkandrick West. Kid's going to be a stud.
Hey, I'm just glad I could pronounce his name correctly. But you mentioned the Lions and their win loss record. I think part of the fact that they only have one win also stems to the fact that among those things burned and said dumpster fire is the ref's officiating flag from K.J. Wright batting the ball out of bounds. But I digress. Next, Chris.
And next you get the Bucs at the Falcons. I mean, the Bucs had over 200 yards in the first quarter last week. But they did lose to the Skins. Falcons didn't look that good against the Titans, but, you know, when you lose the Skins, especially how bad you had that lead and you blow it that way, I'm going to go Falcons.
What was it?
Weasel 2 is going Falcons.
24 to zip, and then you go 31-6. It's pretty much what happened. I think I said it that way earlier in the show. You know, I get that the Falcons may have needed an overtime to beat the Skins. I get that they barely beat the Titans 10-7 this week, but the Bucs lost to the Skins and got crushed by the Titans. Logic by the transitive property. I don't know if I did that right. The scientists will tell me. But logic by the transitive property says the Falcons will win that game. Nick, transitive property, is that in play for you?
All I got to say is this. You had a 25-point lead against the Washington Redskins with Kirk Cousins as a quarterback. I'm dropping the mic and I'm walking away. I'm taking the Falcons.
See, he said what I did, but he did it so much better. I got to give him credit. Next game, Chris.
All right, you got the Arizona Cardinals, the Cleveland Browns. Really, the Browns, they haven't looked good on defense, especially with how good I thought their defense would be. They're not looking that good. You know, Mayfield's going to be starting. I'm going to go to the Arizona Cardinals. Weasel 2 is going to go Cardinals.
So I'm going to make it three people going for the Cardinals because I just have no belief that the Cardinals will lose this game. You know, I don't need more analysis than that. I'll let the scientist get on the chalkboard and go to work. Nick.
Arizona will be coming off a short week against a very viable Baltimore Ravens team. The Browns, they're going to – who the hell am I kidding? Come on, everybody. It's the Browns. It's the freaking Browns. Although, there is this little bit of a tidbit of information. Josh McCown is playing with a bum shoulder. Is it possible that we will see Johnny Football next week? I don't care if you have Johnny Football play 11 Johnny Footballs for all I care. It's going to be the Cardinals. Next.
There you go. Go ahead, Chris. Next game.
The way the Rams have been playing lately, Todd Gurley and everything like that, especially with this front seven, I talk about the Rams, how good they are against this bad O-line of the Niners. I'm going to go Rams. Weasel 2 is going Rams.
Anybody going with the 49ers here? Because I'm not. Are you kidding me? And it's not just the O-line, but sure as hell starts there. Because Rams. Nick?
You know, I'm going to buck against the grain.
Don't do it.
That's right. The mad scientist who a couple of years ago used to pick the Rams ad nauseum no matter who they were playing because he was such a believer. You know, this is what you call the ever-famous trap game. Yes, the Rams are at home. They're playing really well. Gurley's running the ball like he did a couple of years ago at the University of Georgia. The defense looks really solid. But don't you get that sick pit feeling in your stomach that San Francisco's got to come out and do something to ruin a lot of knockout pools and everything like that?
No.
This is going to be that
no,
week
not.
Because I just got that sick pit feeling in my stomach that Carlos Hyde's going to run for over 100 yards. Colin Kaepernick is going to learn how to throw a football. The offensive line is going to gel. And the defense, which hasn't played that bad, it's not their fault that they're on the field 40 to 45 minutes a game. But with that being said, there is no logic behind it. It's what you call a gut feeling. I'm taking the 49ers.
Drop a 40 to 45 minutes a game. I know you would never do that if you were on a show with Russell Baxter. He would tear you apart. I'm just saying.
Yeah, trust me. I know Russell would probably have my head, my ass, my ankles, my fingers, my toes, and whatever else. This is what you call just a gut feeling.
Okay. Hey, look, I didn't understand that you actually threw body parts into your own experiments. But, hey, that means you're devoted to your craft. I respect that. Next, Chris.
Yeah, next you got the Giants at the Saints. Really, this Giants offense hasn't looked good the last 2 weeks. You don't know what you're getting with the Saints. I'm going to go with Saints, even though Giants, you don't know what you're going to get with them, especially against the Saints' weak defense. But I'm just going to go with Saints just because I have no faith in this Giants offense right now. Weasel's also going with the Giants.
Yeah. You know, it's ironic you mention a lack of faith because I don't believe a whole lot in the Saints either. I'm just throwing that out there. You know, one person who won't attend this game? George Michael, because he sang a song called Faith. That's pretty much it. That, and I doubt he's in the football demographic. But what I'm getting to is this. I am stalling because I don't want to have to pick this stupid game. It matters to both teams. And because I like Chris so much as a friend, I'm going to pick the Saints and not the Giants because whenever I pick against the Giants, they seem to win. I got the Saints. Nick.
This is one of those games where you have to pick out a coin and say heads or tails and try to do 2 out of 3, 3 out of 5, 4 out of 7, and so on and so forth. Look, Drew Brees versus Eli Manning. Both defenses... You talk about stalling. I don't even know where to go with this one. You know what? I'll just keep it simple, stupid, and I'll go with the New Orleans Saints.
Boom. All right. Next, Chris.
Next, you got the Vikings at the Bears. I'm going Vikings. Weasel is going to be a homer and going Vikings.
Cue up the Simpsons music. Oh, wait. I'm not the Vikings homer. The next guy is, but I'm still picking the Vikings. Nick?
Let's go! Did that answer your question?
Hey, he said doe. I get it. Homer. Right. Well played. Well played.
I said skull, S-K-O-L, which is Norwegian for dovites.
Oh, you learn something every day. Carry on. All right. Vikes across the board. Chris, next one.
And next you got the Chargers at the Ravens. This Chargers team just doesn't look good this year. I mean, I don't know what's going on with it. But I still think they can win this game against the Ravens. I'm going to go Chargers. Weasel 2 is going Chargers.
You know, I have no reason to believe any team is worthy of winning this game. But faced with a similar conundrum as this, I found myself saying the team, if they're playing a tough team, that the Chargers will lose. And this team may not be as tough as it... No, I can't do it. I got Phillip Rivers and the Chargers. My bad. Nick?
You got to know where I'm going with this one, because you got two of the most disappointing teams in the NFL right now in both the Chargers and the Ravens. Everybody knows I've been in the corner of Joe Flacco since day one when he had the most magical Super Bowl run that any quarterback could ever have. I even put him on the pedestal of the most elite quarterbacks in the NFL. And what did I get for it? Severe disappointment. And then you look on the other side, and to use a quote from a good friend of mine, you have Philip the Fraud Rivers showing why exactly he is a complete and utter fraud. Although he had one of the greatest games and a losing effort of all time. Look, I got to go with the home team on this one. I got to go with the Ravens just for the sheer fact that, you know, the West Coast teams can't play a 10 o'clock in the morning game on their own time. So I'm just saying.
Well, in fairness, you'll notice that Rivers has been far less fraudulent ever since his offensive coordinator is the same guy that got Tim Tebow to win a playoff game. I'm just saying.
Burn!
I'm just saying. Okay, Chris, next.
Next, you got the Bengals at the Steelers. Look, I mean, Landry Jones starting again. I'm going Bengals. Weasel 2 is going Bengals.
The rumor is that Roethlisberger is supposed to come back, and if that's the case, this game becomes wildly more compelling, arguably the best one you'll see of the week, and yes, that's despite two 6-0 teams facing each other. Even still, with it only being Ben's first week back, and we all know a bastion of a man that he is that can, you know, he's basically what the Colossus of Rhodes looks like if that statue is finished. Yeah, that's right. That's some geography schmat. What? Anyways, if you don't know, the scientists will tell you. I still at this time would be inclined to pick the Red Rifle to win a shootout past the Steelers. Nick.
You guys make it sound like the Steelers are being the dregs of the NFL or something like that. People go, listen to me and listen well. The Steelers' defense has gelled very well since that debacle on week one. Right now they're 4-2, two games behind the Bengals. This is Marvin Lewis, a guy who can't coach himself out of a paper bag after the bye week. Take a look at the record, people. Coming off a bye week right now. And the Red Rifle, I'm just waiting for that one game when the Red Rifle becomes the red pea shooter. It's going to happen this game. I'm taking the Steelers.
So, wait. So, if the Steelers are a good defense and Andy Dalton doesn't do as well, is that still Andy Dalton's fault? The answer is always yes, because the world hates Andy Dalton, especially if you put Joe Flacco on a pedestal burn. 6-0 and he can't coach his way out of a paper bag. Come on, Nick.
Well, Andy Dalton, the AFC version of Tony Romo anyway, but let's move on.
Oh, Lord! Actually, I like that. I should have thought of that by now. That's good. Anyways, next one, Chris.
Yeah, you get the Titans at the Texans. I mean, how big of a dumpster fire Texans are down there. I mean, you know, Hoyer is a quarterback. You know, they don't know what they're doing with Mallett. Mallett, I mean, ever since he got his panties in a wad that game a couple weeks ago.
Wadded panties. Out. It's just,
he's just going, you know, crazy. I mean, missed the chartered flight the other day, so he had to fly commercial down to Miami. Valerian Foster and everything. I'm going Titans. Weevil's going Titans.
Let me ask you this question, Chris. Which caused more wadded panties for Ryan Mallett? The fact that he was pulled out of that game against the Colts as he was, or the fact that he was on the flight to get to this game and no one recognized him? Burn. Ryan, I should be holding a croquet mallet. Yeah. And you know what's funny is we talked about those quarterbacks, and really the best quarterback on the field this day is going to be Zach Mettenberger. Do not watch this game. Just know the Titans will win. Nick.
Oh, God. There's, excuse me for 1 second. Okay, there. I got that out. It's the Titans.
You're getting a chance to do all the classics. All we need to do is talk about the Jaguars. Oh, damn it. They have a bye. Next game, Chris.
But you're still going to look up. And you're still going to look up into the stands. You're going to look at the owner. And you're going to scream, come on!
Thanks for that. Chris, next.
All right, we got the Jets at the Raiders. Even though the Raiders had an impressive win the other day, this Jets team, I like what they were doing. I'm going to go Jets. Weasel's going to go Jets.
So, wait. Jets and who? I missed that.
Raiders.
Yeah, I'll take the Jets, but I do so slowly. I do believe in DC4. I just don't believe him quite that much. Nick, who you got?
You know, the Jets are licking their wounds after giving up that game against the Patriots. I have a funny feeling they're going to take out all their frustrations on a West Coast trip to the Raiders. The problem that I have with this is, I picked the Jets with a little trepidation, is that any time they go to Oakland, bad things always happen to the Jets. So I will take the Jets, but I do so very, very leerily.
Well, it's not like it'll be happening on Halloween weekend. Oh, damn it, Wade!
Oh, sorry!
Next game, Chris.
You got the Seahawks at the Cowboys. This game, I originally... That was when they had Tony Romo and Dez Bryant. Not sure if Dez Bryant's coming back. I'm going to go Seahawks. Weasel's going Seahawks.
I don't care if Dez Bryant's coming back. I don't have any hope. Even with the best offensive line in the NFL, like the Cowboys have, because Matt Castle, I say no, I have the Seahawks, and Russell Wilson looks better than he should yet again. Nick.
Brandon Whedon, Matt Castle, Joe Randall, okay. Well, let's just go like this. As long as Matt Castle, Brandon Whedon are quarterback in that team, and there is no Dez Bryant, and there is no DeMarco Murray, and there is no, authoritative figure on the sideline that can keep Greg Hardy from slapping good clipboards out of the hands of a kicking coach, I'm going to take the Seahawks.
Yeah, but you're going after Jonathan Randall, really? I mean, you say no DeMarco Murray, they still run the football. I'm just saying. No, I still got the Seahawks, don't get me wrong.
they can run the football all they want. It's not DeMarco Murray.
Yeah, it's been Darren McFadden who had 159 yards. Just saying. DeMarco Murray's overrated.
Don't ever mention that name in my presence ever again. Darren McFadden.
You mean Run DMC who got 159 yards last night?
Nick Lyon.
Nick, or Chris, next game.
All right. One of these teams gonna have their first loss of the season. You get the 6-0 Green Bay Packers against the 6-0 Denver Broncos. I'm gonna go with the Packers. Weasel's gonna go with the Packers.
Yeah. The only thing I think that'll make this game even relatively intriguing, other than the fact that it's in Denver, is the fact that Peyton Manning will have had a week's worth of rest, which sets him up to actually do well against the Packers defense. However, the Packers defense is still very dangerous. Granted, not as dangerous as the Broncos, but as I've said for teams before in this league, at some point you have to score the points to win the game. And Peyton Manning's good, but he's not great anymore. I have the Packers. Nick.
All hail at the altar of Peyton Manning. Manning is God. Game is in Denver. I take Denver.
Wow. Okay, so apparently the Kool-Aid still has the cyanide in it. Moving on. Go ahead, Chris. Next game.
All right, Monday night, you got the Colts at the Panthers. Look, this Colts team's not as good as we
thought it would be and everything. I got Panthers playing pretty well. I'm going Panthers. Weasel's going Panthers.
You're going anti-Dennis Green on me. They are not who we thought they were. And that's absolutely right. The Panthers extend the streak, showing yet again that they are a candidate, if not the toughest team in the NFL right now. I said it. Nick.
I tell you this much, Indianapolis just has no luck. But I'm bummed.
I see what you did.
The Panthers.
I see what you did there. Because that was true for a time. But they had luck. But they didn't have luck because Jason Myers missed two field goals and Jackson, whatever. So that'll do it for the picks this week. Just one last thing. Since I have you here, Nick, before I let you go, yesterday, you being a mad scientist and all that, I shouldn't say yesterday. Last week, I posed the premise that I asked, are the Carolina Panthers the toughest team, the most physical team in the NFL right now here in 2015? Both my panelists told me no. Weasel didn't have a good answer for a team that's actually more strong, but at least Chris provided the Jets, despite homerism, I guess. But Carolina Panthers, the toughest team in the NFL. Where do you come out, Nick?
You know, I would say they would be 1A. To the toughest team in the NFL. I still have to believe that as long as the Seattle Seahawks can get their head in gear, that defense will forever strike fear in the hearts of many. Carolina is really dang close to doing the same thing. Luke Kuechly is pretty much the most dominant inside linebacker I've seen in quite some time. That front four loves to devour running backs and quarterbacks like they were like fresh meat. I still have that slight trepidation on the defensive backfield, but every week they seem to be proving a lot of people wrong. And that offense, my God, you know, they're very, very underrated. A lot of people were like, when Kelvin Benjamin got hurt third this year, you know, that it would take away from Cam Newton. Well, Cam's showing what that. Can we finally give Cam Newton some credit that he's the toughest quarterback in the NFL right now? This is a guy that has no problem lowering his shoulder and barreling over defensive backs and linebackers like it was out of style. And if Mike Tolbert didn't show what toughness was yesterday, then you probably were smoking something that didn't taste too good. But
well,
I will say this.
Great. I don't know. Anyways.
No, but I will say this. They are very, very close to being the toughest team overall in the NFL. I still have to give the slightest, and I mean slightest, razor-thin advantage to the Seattle Seahawks.
So then they're not 1A. They're just a close number 2. You're trying to take one out of that E.J. Christian book with this 1A trash. Not in this house.
Yeah, I know. I tried.
Nick, tell the people where they can find you, bro.
My name is Nick Ficcarelli. I am the Mad Scientist of Sports. You can find me on Twitter at NAF_inscriber. My show is Saturday night, 10 p.m. Eastern Time, 7 p.m. Pacific, on Blog Talk Radio. It's called the Mad Scientist Sports Lab, where myself and the nutty professor, Andrew Glukoff, give you 2 hours of pure, absolute, unbelievable sports and mayhem. And I got to tell you, it feels good to be back in the house of Nash and Rankin and Weasel on the student of the game. And I hope to make more appearances further down the road.
Yeah, man, absolutely. Although I would make one correction, even though that's your outro and everything. Nutty Professor, no. In this house, he is Stat Boy. I'm just saying.
Yes, I know. He will forever be known as Stat Boy in the House of Nash. But as long as he's on the Mad Scientist Sports Lab, he's my Nutty Professor.
Hey, you're the weirdo that promoted him. That's a you problem. I'm just saying. All right, man. Hey, honor and privilege.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, man. It was a lot of fun, man. Thanks for stopping by, Nick.
No problem. Have a good night.
Nick Ficcarelli. Yeah, back in the house, by the way, at NGSC Sports, you'll see him among our syndicated shows. He posts over the weekend as his show is Saturday night in the Mad Scientist Sports Lab with Inscriber Network. So there you go. Of course, That'll wrap it up for us, finishing up the study hall. You can find Weasel, wish him well as he recovers from an MCL surgery here, at Weasel the SOTG. Check out the local hero himself, Hydraulic Upright, on Twitter, UPRIT. That, of course, is Chris Rankin. And I am Kyle Nash, the student of the game. You can find me on Twitter at the SOTG. And check out this week's edition of the Matchup Mania. You can find that on NGSCSports.com. And good times all the way around there. So until next time, everybody, class dismissed.